Hello, welcome to Fish Talk, a talk show about fish on the Kuskokwim. I'm Anna Rose MacArthur. With me translating the show into Yupik is John Active. Hey, John.
Wakauna Anna Rose MacArthur, Mana Kayo, Kimikan, just Hulutin, Wanikanakalas Katakhut, Unani, Kuspo, Fugmi, Grimatulin, Tara, Fagpatonic, Jalek, Mumixi, Kaka, Akumgachi, Ugut, Asanga.
And today on Fish Talk, we're talking about how fish and game uses weirs and sonar to count salmon moving up the Kuskokwim. Weirs have been a fixture throughout the drainage for a long time, but meanwhile, sonar has been used throughout the state, but has only recently come to the Kuskokwim. We'll discuss what these technologies do and also how they help managers make decisions about where and how we fish.
Jali unam kalah semtni nakhni kunani kusro fagmi ukut man khit kalah chi kut kaisun atulat khita makut wirat jali tok makut sonar nakitulit nakhni kui malgen ketpun makut wirat atu malakut mani sejap ni tegua mak pak mani atu katarun kusro fagmi kaisun ayu kut chi kaisun ayatu chi kaisun.
And I have three guests in the studio today. They're all from Fish and Game. Zach Liller is a fisheries researcher. Hello, Zach.
Hey, all. Thanks for having me in.
And Nick Smith is a fisheries biologist, and he's leading the sonar project. Hi, Nick.
Hello.
And Jordan Head is a fisheries biologist who oversees the weirs in the mid.
Hey, good afternoon.
And thank you all for being here today. So we'll get started with talking about the sonar project. So first of all, where is it, and then what does it do?
So this is Nick Smith. So the sonar project is located in between Church Slough and Napuskiak Slough on the upper end there, down from the Kwethluk Y. And how it works, if you've ever used a depth finder in your boat or to find fish with a depth finder, it's really the same principle. And what it does is sends out sound waves through the water, and those sound waves are then bounced off of fish back to a receiver. So what, instead of being on your boat, we have the sonar units on the both banks of the Kuskokwim River, and those are then projecting out into the river. Those sound waves are then hitting fish and bouncing back, and that gives us an idea of how many fish are swimming past that sonar site. So while that gives us a great estimate of how many fish are in the river, it doesn't actually tell us what species of fish are in the river. So to do that, we also operate a test fishery at the test or at the sonar site, and that tells us what species are going by the sonar. And then we can use those numbers, you know, if you think of it as a big jar of jelly beans, that you know how many are in there, but you don't know how many of each color. That test fishery then lets us know how many of each color, which would be how many fish of each species are swimming past the sonar site. So I guess that's a little precursor to how the sonar is working up there.
This sonar technology is not a new technology. It's been used on rivers.
Yeah, this is Zach. That's a neat question. So it actually isn't completely new to the Cusco. We had a couple of years back in the early 80s, and then again in the the early and late 80s, where they actually tested the feasibility of this particular technology and then opted to go in a different direction. And then brought it back in the late 90s for a couple of years. And then again, we put most of our investment, moved away from sonar and went towards weirs. And then it's been kind of a combination of things. Over the last couple of decades, sonar technology as well as our staffing experience has continued to grow. And then the need for fisheries managers to have better data about the number of salmon moving through the lower river has kind of prompted us to bring this, bring the technology back to the Cusco.
Asirniluku doekwa tanglami taunam sonaq moromachekun qafchiusit nqit kitulrit.
The Kuskokwim has had the Bethel test fishery, it's had the Aniak test fishery for, as I understand it, decades, as well as these weirs. So now with this sonar technology on board, what is this adding to the data that the Kuskokwim didn't have before?
Nick Smith here. So what the sonar is adding for our current assessment, or adding to our current assessment, is the test fisheries are great at what they do. They give us indications of run strength and what species are coming through the river. The weirs give us very excellent data on escapement. So once fish have passed all the communities that have been fishing on them, we then get a good idea of how many made it to the spawning grounds. So what the sonar adds is it gives us information on the total number of fish that are traveling up the Kuskokwim River. So that also highlights with the Bethel test fishery that we know what species and how strong the runs are coming in, but now we know how many fish total are swimming up the river.
Makutuka test fishery, Ikayo to Kafshin Chang Yungas hit Chakuchi Torton. Jalisu sonaram, Ikayo Suki Nakakat and Nakat Kafchiuchi get Mukhit Nakat.
Because this is the first year that sonar has been used in a long time on the Kuskokwim, what is it you're learning? What are you having to adjust in this first season as you go along?
Nick Smith. So in this first season of full-scale operations, the prior three, or during this season, we've been just kind of getting accustomed to the site and running a full crew and trying to get any bugs that are currently in it. But prior to this full-scale operations, we had 3 full years of feasibility work, which really laid the groundwork. So there really are no bugs at this point that have really popped up, other than, you know, this is a new project and we're looking to see how the numbers with this project correspond with all of these old assessment data projects that are in the water, like the Bethel test fishery and the weir program, like you mentioned.
If I was standing next to the sonar site on the bank, what would I see? What does it look like?
Nick Smith. So at the sonar site, you'd see, if you were driving up from Bethel, say to Queefluck, on the right-hand side of the river, you'd see a tan weatherport tent set up and a long net stringing into the water. So we use that as a fish lead to direct fish around the sonar unit so they don't swim behind it. And at the end of that fish lead, you'd see a couple buoys sticking up. And that's where the actual sonar units are placed in the water. On the left-hand side, as you were driving upriver, you would see the sonar camp and that's where the crew stays and where we process all the data. And on that side, you'd also see another buoy in the water, and that's where another sonar apparatus is placed in the water that is counting fish.
And so you describe what it looked like, and you mentioned a camp. So are people there all the time? If so, what's a day in the life of someone at the sonar station?
That is correct. We do have people staying at the camp for the entire field season. There's currently five technicians and two biologists staying there. And a typical day in the life is in the morning. Counts are made on all of the files that are collected from the sonar units. And then test fishing occurs twice a day. So in the morning, we have a test fishing session that goes out and drift fishes. And then in the afternoon, it's the same thing. So people will recognize that we do have boats out in the water for most of the day drifting gill nets. And that's a typical day at the sonar site, is drift fishing and then counting the files that are collected from the sonar units.
You've talked about how this sonar can improve the counting of fish on the abundance, would that be the right word, moving
Correct.
Up the river. How is this affecting management? Have we seen it in the management decision so far, or how could it affect it down the road?
Yeah, this is Zach. Yeah, that's a really cool question. I think it's something that's still yet to fully be realized. It's going to take a little bit of time to figure out exactly how to roll this into the management conversations. For this particular year, it's definitely been something that we've been watching, that managers have been looking at. All the state as well as federal managers, as well as all the advisory committees, have been getting sonar updates on a daily basis. But really, right now, we're paying particular attention to the Bethel test fishery and what it tells us about run strength, because that's the project that has operated longer. We have a lot more familiarity with using it. But I will say that the sonar numbers have been corroborating what the test fishery has been telling us. You know that Chinook salmon runs are particularly weak this year. However, chum and sockeye runs are looking quite healthy.
My sonar Nakin Naksamuk Nikov Chuchit Nakat Quick Gat Mukhit. To also make a test fish with Atoruki, Chaku cheat, Changi Ungashit, Nakluki, to a Tamakuk Taukuka, Atoruki Nakit, Mark Paka, Unani Naknakus of Agnik, Gat Mukhanik. So now at one test fish with Kundu.
And Nick, you're overseeing this sonar project. Have you been with it from the beginning when the tests over the last 3 years were done?
This is Nick Smith again. Yes, I have been around with feasibility projects. I wasn't specifically charged with operating those. Those were based out of our AYK regional sonar outfit out of Fairbanks. And I've been around for the last 3 years while those occurred and helped out with a lot of the feasibility work.
Yeah, this is Zach. Just to kind of add into that, there's still quite a bit of continuity, though, between the feasibility work and this first year of operation. The regional sonar coordinator, Carl Fisser, who works out of Fairbanks, is instrumental in making sure that all the equipment is properly calibrated, and then comes out and visits the site at the beginning of the season to make sure that everything's set up properly. And then the crew leader, Keegan Birchfield, was with us for all 3 years of the feasibility work and stayed on to help kind of bring us into the sonar era here on the Cusco.
Jalilin makut mukhlni lugi naqut taisona tasfishwitu atoriungautsiit naqeqata neqnik qafsiitsiitin chakuutsiitinlu.
So we'll transition from sonars now to weirs. First, how many weirs are on the Kuskokwim or within the drainage?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Within the drainage.
And this is Jordan Head.
Oh yeah, my name is Jordan. Within the drainage itself and within the bay, there's the Good News River weir down in the bay. As you move up the river, you have two weirs operated by Fish and Wildlife Service on the Guisluck and the Tulixac. Then as you move farther up the river, get towards Aniak area, you have the Salmon River weir, which is in the Aniak River, and that's operated has been operated as a combination of, you know, fish and game and the old K&A. And more recently, the native village of Napaimute has taken over operating that weir exclusively. So we kind of partner with them on that, but they are running that themselves this year, which is really great. As you move farther up, you get to the Sleepmute, or actually Georgetown, and up the George River, there's a weir. And farther up from that in Sleepmute in the Halitna area, there's the Kagrugluk. And the Kagrugluk River weir has been running for decades. It's our longest standing weir project in the drainage. So that's been around a long time. It's a really cool cabin up there, really cool stuff, old antiques. It's great. Up from there, you have the Tatlowixik River weir, which is run by Fish and Game. And then this year, for the first time since 2013, the Takotna River went back in the water, and that's being run by the Takotna and MTNT up there. They're kind of partnering up to run that, got some grant money to run that. And then our farthest upstream weir is up on the Salmon River of the Pika Fork. And that weir recently went in a couple of years ago, and we're getting some really good information out of there. So I think that's eight, right?
No.
Long way to answer a short question.
Thank you. And John?
Yeah, my good coffee. We're at the Hitapix Hui Kan system. I thought you want to come. Good news. Do I show I pa malok jelly? We assume to look some do some quick chalnegni at Dutch Huakawak Farney, Salmon River, Aniak, Jelly Su, Georgetown River, Dini Pitan Cluny, Iloni, Sleet Mute, Crooked Creek, Do I jelly maloka like Kawak Farney, Kawak Fan Kuk, Weirak. Salmon River Amnunintuk. Being I only good we're at Atokungait Mark Pakunanikus of Ogmi.
So, like I asked with the sonar project, if I was standing on the bank looking at one of these weirs, what would I see?
It really depends on which project you go to. There's basically two main types of weirs within the Kuskokwim area. There's one that's called a floating weir. And you see a bunch of PVC pipe is essentially what you see strung across the river. It's anchored down to the bottom by what looks like railroad ties. And so you make this lattice work of PVC pipe. And so you see kind of a big arching PVC pipe weir coming out of the water that extends all the way across the river. You'd also see what we call a fish trap, a lot, you know, a big box where we can do our sampling. So when fish come through the weirs, sometimes we'll go out and we'll sample them for their age by taking scales. We'll sample them for lengths, and we need a space to do that. So you'll see a big box in the middle of the river where the technicians can go stand in and take those samples. On a more traditional fixed picket weir, essentially what that is metal pickets. They look almost like, you know, sewer pipe, real small, like 1-inch sewer pipe that makes almost what looks exactly like a picket fence across the river. And so those ones are more metal, and they go very straight across the river, and they look really cool too. And then at all of our weir camps, we have, you know, either a cabin or, you know, tents and weather ports and stuff like that, so the crews can live and be comfortable there. And, you know, if you were there for the whole day, you'd see people going in and out and counting fish.
I don't know if you could see that some weir. I could see it. Ilita chupunk pitank to quigum a canon I had to limit Chaput Harlun in Kasuto at a Makura Rata, Nakasita Mansuting, Naki looking at Jali, Tamakut Naki wit, Yasink, Ramacheni, Nakasuta Mavit, Itrakata, Go shooting Chakuchi, Kang Naruki. Makutun Kstait Atoruki, Yvre Luki, Chalia Sauna Chapun, Chauskuluni, Dauna Chali, Quigamakan, Ayagaksuni, the Guam Arulak Sixana and Naknak, Kitulita Guam Nako Luki, the money you will read. Nkhartan Klachtok, you took Zenitan Hugak Sutin, Noko and Damani.
Jordan, you said that if you were observing these weirs, you'd see people coming in and out, and they'd be looking at the fish. You mentioned measuring the age of the fish, the length of the fish. What other information are we getting from these weirs?
Well, this is Jordan again. The main piece of information we're getting is how many fish are getting into the river. We call it escapement. Essentially, escapement just means how many fish made it up to spawn. How many fish are up there to reproduce more salmon for us to, catch in later years. So that's what we're looking for is the main thing. The exact number of fish that go up these different tributaries that make up the Kuskokwim drainage. In addition to that, there's several other things we look for. You know, we collect climate and weather data on a daily basis. Rain, you know, how much it rains, what the water levels do. Those can go into, you know, informing a lot of other stuff. We also, one of the other main things is collecting what we call ASL data. A lot of people do it down here in the subsistence ASL program, but what we're doing is we're going out and you're collecting a scale. And how that works is you pluck one of the scales off the fish, and the scales grow almost like a tree. They have rings. And you can tell how old they are based on how those rings form on the scale. So that's how we collect age. Is the technicians out there collect a scale, they send it back to the lab in Anchorage, and they look at all of those and determine how old each one of those fish are. In addition to that, they get lengths, so they're measuring how big each of the fish are. And then we collect sex information. Is it a male? Is it a female? And that is kind of the main information that we're gathering out there at the weirs.
The money cook we're on each other, Chalakan, who could static to good luck to Tatarjaram to a snark suki. Kaisun Ayuk sit. We even collected them to Makut and Kitstat. We even shooting Kulutan Ayuk Nanating. The Guam Nakakam Kitamakut. We even sit. A touchy tarlogi pitarlogi, knock to it or tokun, knock a ramki, kafsin kashakun, pirk hank, taring a shooting. jali taktachit gulagait chukluki jali chukakuchit amuchalut khwa aganachalut ignidulitwa.
So escapement, you said, was the main purpose of these weirs, measuring escapement, and that's been a big discussion of this whole season, particularly with king salmon looking at those low runs. And a part of that discussion has been not just the drainage-wide escapement, but also these individual tributary escapements. And some have been meeting escapement in past years, some haven't. So what's the current situation right now? Are certain tributaries consistently not meeting escapement? What does it look like for this season?
Yeah, this is Zach. That's a very timely question, and you're right. That has been a big topic of conversation. A lot of our in-season management meetings is kind of what our downriver mainstem projects are telling us about the probability of meeting escapements. But really, the rubber hits the road when we get the weirs in and actually start seeing fish make it to the spawning grounds. And it's been kind of a mixed bag in recent years. Folks, we've talked quite a bit about low king salmon runs since about 2010, and the runs stayed pretty low, and consequently escapement goals were generally not met at many of our tributaries during those years. But then,
so which year specifically?
So 2010 through 2013, those particular years, it was difficult meeting tributary escapement goals because of just the low run sizes.
But 2013, if I'm correct, is the only year that didn't meet the drainage-wide goal.
So the drainage-wide goal was actually established in 2013. So, but really, once folks recognized that we had a series of low runs and started taking management actions to really ensure that we meet these escapement goals, 2014 and 2015, escapements were kind of average at a lot of locations. There were some places, particularly in the Middle River, that we monitor with aerial surveys, where we've had a real hard time meeting escapement goals for several consecutive years. But the places where we have weirs, the Queethluck, the Cugrugluck, the George River, those guys all have escapement goals. And it's been a bit of a mixed bag, but by and large, we've been meeting those tributary goals. George River was not met last year. That was the only weir-based tributary goal that wasn't met last year.
Makunak weir on katakuloting daging 2010-2013 a hanranik iklina haniluki kutoy magutareak fit kuksaktulwit kawabit. Jali kakfang ni tingsut ni katakuloting nakilaktut kafchichit ni kinakitket mukhtlchit. Doi tawam kanagiluni
last year, many areas of the river saw high water, and there was a concern that the weirs could be disrupted on the accuracy of their measurements. This year, there's low water. Could that in any way be affecting the weirs?
Well, low water is really great for weirs. This year, installing the weirs was incredibly easy because the water was so low. We got them all in almost record time for all of them. The low water can be a little problematic as far as, low water doesn't give the fish a lot of room to move around in the water, in the river itself. So, it could have an impact as far as whether fish are going to want to swim upriver in those tributaries, or if they're going to wait and kind of mill around the mouth like you're kind of seeing around the Aniak area right now. So it could have an impact. It could make them a little bit later than we would normally see them, because there's not a lot of water in the river to push them up. But as far as the weirs and counting fish and their ability to do it, it actually is ideal conditions for that.
Biok alhagni millishani chapnakhsuk tagwamakh pak mak asiqlan shishhatta makut wirat qachiginakhsuni naqaqam neqnik jali
So Jordan, you mentioned fish milling around at the base of some of these tributaries, particularly in Aniak, they're seeing that. And there was discussion yesterday at the Kuskokwim Salmon Management Working Group that this milling could be affecting the counting that's happening at the Aniak test fishery. So what's happening in Aniak with that milling? At least what's the theory there?
Yeah, this is Zach. I can take that one. We've been talking really heavy the last couple of days between fish and game staff and folks over at Fish and Wildlife Services, and obviously our partner, Native Village and the Paimute, who's operating that test fishery, as well as folks who live up in Aniak that are just really familiar with that particular location. And one thing that kind of is unique about this year, so for folks that are familiar with the Aniak area, where the Aniak comes down and meets the main stem Kuskokwim, right just a little bit off from the mouth, there's an island. And it's a really long, kind of thin island. And in most years, the Aniak River is, the clear water that comes out of the Aniak River is kind of confined to one side of that island. And basically goes right down between the, on the back side of that island. And then a good chunk of that water goes down the Aniak Slough. And a little bit of that water kind of trickles down along in front of the face of the seawall there where folks park their boat along the main stem in front of Aniak. And it's easily recognized because it's just crystal clear water, and then there's a nice line where there's really muddy water, which is the main stem Kuskokwim. This year, because the water levels up around Aniak have been so low in the main stem, a lot more of that clear water is not being confined to the backside of that island. It's actually seeping out around the top and coming down on the other side of the island, which is where the test fish crew does their drifts. And so as salmon move upriver, they're kind of trying to zone in on the signature of the tributary that they want to go back and spawn in. So one of the theories is that the Aniak River fish that normally would be associated real tight against the bank and avoid the test fish site by going behind that island may actually be out on the other side this year and spending a little bit more time there than normal, and now actually available to get caught where they weren't before.
John? Jordan, when you were describing the weirs initially, you mentioned this one weir. You said it has an old cabin, antiques in there. It's pretty interesting. I imagine that a lot of these have a very long history. They're in these remote locations on top of that. And we just talk about some of that history for some of these weirs that you find interesting?
Yeah, I think that's one of the great things about fish and game projects is some of these ones that have been around for a long time, you can kind of see the history there. You know, it's just up at the Kegrugluk River weir, and that went in what, the early 70s? You know, so there's been, you know, a whole bunch of people who've worked there from within the community, from within, you know, within this river. And that's one of the really great parts about this job is, you know, I can go out in Anchorage and walk around and probably stumble across a couple people who've worked on weirs in the Kuskokwim. And it's just such a weird small world that way. But, you know, when you get a bunch of people like that going out to projects, they kind of tweak it, they kind of make it their own, they make it their home for the summer, you know, so they put up posters, and you know, you have old posters from 20 years ago up on the wall in the Kegrugluk cabin. You got, you know, old oil crates that are you know, you see on American Pickers selling for hundreds of dollars, and you're like, wow, this, take this home with me, you know. They there's just a bunch of cool stuff, because you know, when you're really remote, you bring stuff out and it doesn't tend to make it back always, so you have this, you know, plethora of really awesome trinkets and cool old generators and stuff that are, yeah, antiques. The Kagrogalak Weir itself was actually, the cabin there was built by the Ignatys way back in the 70s. I think Fish and Game contracted them to make it. I'm not 100%.
And what are the Ignatys?
It's just a family that lived up the Kagrogalak River for years and years, back in the, you know, and they were there back in the 70s, and their old cabins are kind of starting to deteriorate a little bit. They're just downriver from the weir. But that's kind of cool to go walk around where they used to live. But yeah, that's part of the charm, I think, of, you know, working a summer at Fish and Game or working out at one of the weirs, is you're going to live somewhere where people have been living for 15, 20, 30, 40 years, and kind of collecting stuff, and you get to make it your own, and you get to leave a mark on it too. A lot of our cabins have, you know, names written all over them. You know, so-and-so here, you know, 2010, you know, I was up at the George River Weir, the Tatlowixik River Weir last week, and one of my friends, Carlton, I saw his name on the table, take a picture of it and send it to him. I'm like, hey, man. He's like, oh, I remember that. So it's, the history of the Weir program is really cool, and there's been a lot of great people who've worked at them, and I'm just proud to be a part of it.
Jale kaisun lita ko malas kita makut wirat nun night anyagami kuga guma kani huka tam akasa persut atula sit akatamar tamanik nirnik ayok fknatin su akasa atula sit jale sumgni nakilutun nirnik tamani janektanik nittaglutun tamani kanrut kai Jali tulit nunanik suku tamang cugak sudin susalnya kaming makun nasunah kutanik akasarnik seh sudin tamaw to li tak nak suni akasau cetam worm nuni anyaram nunini.
How can people who are interested in fisheries biology or in fisheries management or just a summer job get involved with these weirs or this sonar project?
Yeah, this is Jordan. You know, almost every year, come about March, April, May, we're looking for people to work on these projects. And we do a lot of emailing out to people we know. We post jobs on Workplace Alaska. And We're looking for good people who want to go out and, you know, work hard and have a good time. All of us at the Bethel office would be happy to talk to anybody about working, you know, next summer, or if we need some help this summer, and you can call the Bethel office at, do you know the number?
Yeah, this is Zach, 2433.
Yeah, so call us over there, ask for, you know, Zach or Jordan or Nick. And, you know, we can talk to you about the opportunities to go work at the sonar or at the weirs. You know, right now, the sonar project has, you know, two people from the Bethel area working there. On the weirs, we have eight technicians, and like six or seven of them are locals from the river, from Aniak, Bethel, and up into the McGrath area. So, we really like having people from the local community work for us, and because you guys do a really great job, and you know the river really well, and you know, a lot better than we do most of the time, and so we really depend on the technicians out there. And that being said, you know, a lot of them listen to the radio show. You know, we have to say hi to the Kagrogalak crew, because Glenn's probably listening right now, and you know, all of our weirs and all the sonar projects. Can't tell you how thankful we are to have the crews we have, because we don't do most of the work. You know, the technicians and the crews are the ones out there on a day-to-day basis, you know, putting in the effort to make all this happen, and we get to go on the radio and have, you know, fun and talk to people, but they're out there, you know, doing the work, and we appreciate them so much, and they do such a great job.
Wakanik kawani, jayulgeni ukuni mskulikni jalehtangtuk wirani jayulgeni makutjalehkat nasunaromalasut matum statemta illohtuku maanisumamtriisrmiitta makutta jaliwit wirani sonarani tu makumunikpin
We get a lot of questions about how weirs affect fish and if they are having any impact on whether or not they're moving upriver. What effect do these weirs have on the fish?
Yeah, this is Zach. You know, weirs have been around for a long time, and we have learned a ton. But it's really been in the last, here on the Kuskokwim, since maybe mid-2000s, when we started doing a bunch of tagging work, where we got to actually see how fish move through the weirs. And it's really cool. You know, a lot of these fish that are tagged in the main stem, we get a chance to follow them around, and we get to see them as they approach their spawning tributary.
And when you say tagged, do you mean radio tagging?
Yeah, I mean radio tags. So for folks that are unfamiliar, a radio tag is just, it's an apparatus that is affixed to the fish, and it allows us to follow them around. It doesn't hurt them, but it allows us to see where they go and see how they behave. But what's really cool is as they get close to their spawning tributaries, we can see how they kind of naturally slow down as they're sort of looking for the right way to get in or whether this is the tributary that they want to go to. And then we can watch and see how long it takes them to get from the mouth of the tributary to the weir location. And then we can see whether or not they just go on through, or whether they actually hang out behind the weir. And, I mean, make no bones, it's a fence in the river. It slows them down. But a well-run weir is going to have somebody out counting fish, letting fish through actively throughout the bulk majority of the day. The weir should really only be closed. Our types of weirs are really only closed at night while the crew is sleeping. There's other weirs like Fish and Wildlife Service uses that uses a video camera, and they're open all the time, so fish can freely swim through. But generally speaking, by watching these tagged fish, these radio tagged fish, we can see that they'll sort of stack up a little bit behind the weir for a couple of hours, and then when somebody goes out and opens the gate, as soon as that first fish finds the hole, the rest just sort of follow. And generally after an hour or two of opening that gate and letting fish move through, the bulk majority of the fish behind the weir have emptied out, and they continue on their merry way. The difference can be in some of our weirs that are located so far upriver that they're actually in the spawning grounds for all intents and purposes. They're about where the fish wants to go. Those fish are often much less motivated to move. They might hang out behind a weir naturally because there's good holding water there, perhaps. They might hang out there for days. But generally speaking, and we've confirmed it with our radio tags, the fish that want to move past the weirs, they get past, they spawn successfully. So it's really a great tool to, the weirs that is, a great tool to count fish and get a good understanding of the quality of the escapement and the number of the escapement at different locations throughout the drainage.
Doqua chapluki nakat get mukhit bilakai chapluki do tamane kuxharluki unukpak do amsheta nakluki kafchichi chakuchichi do tari nakluki do tana chapun ikhluku ikakh ikhsan sutoi sasamilloni tamaku chabu mashat nakat ayaglutin dokhun ikikh fetkun Getmochluten koch fich amaknul. The warm illini getmochtarata Nalutsich Hedun Pilagat Sini Lutin dort nat mun arg kamen darin amt ho dort geht mir so wie mich so gschüten de warm chap kharluki nakilasin nit chakuchi ta ba kut nak piluki dort ich so gut da na chapu mas
As we're moving forward, what is the future looking like for these weirs, for the sonar project? Weirs seem they take a lot of people power to run. You mentioned that Fish and Wildlife is using video cameras at its weir. Is Fish and Game looking to go in that direction?
Yeah, so the future of salmon assessment on the Cusco, it's kind of definitely a loaded question, but it's a good one, and it's really timely. You know, there's been a lot of discussions about, you know, how expensive projects are and how a lot of agencies don't have a whole lot of money to operate expensive projects. But the reality is it's a team effort. You know, there's a lot of different groups that are working to continue these projects and make sure that they're properly funded and staffed. As far as weirs go, you know, I don't really see a scenario where there's no weirs operating on the Kuskokwim. In particular, we've got a lot of commitment to make sure that we have at least one, if not more, weirs in each of the main locations. So say the middle portion of the drainage, the lower portion, as well as the headwaters. And it's really good to have a good distribution of those weir projects. We're also working pretty hard to collaborate with a wide variety of folks to help continue those weirs. So Jordan mentioned earlier that Native Village of Napaimute has recently taken over full operation of the Salmon Aniak Weir. We also have MTNT in the community of Takotna up in the headwaters that has, with some funding from Intertribal Fish Commission and BSFA, they're rejuvenating the Takotna River Weir for at least a couple of years. You know, so kind of those partnerships to keep these projects going, I think, makes us all stronger and gives us a lot more options. The sonar project I see is having a big impact long term. It's going to really help us understand the total number of fish, but not just certainly not just king salmon, but chum and sockeye. Whitefish, so giving us a lot of really good information over the long term about the abundance of all species. One thing that I would note is that, you know, the future is not, it's not just a fish and game decision. You know, I mean, we work pretty heavily with our partners at U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. We actually get a lot of our funding to operate state projects from Fish and Wildlife Service, Office of Subsistence Management. So, you know, it's a conversation with our partners as well as our advisory groups. The Kuskokwim River Salmon Management Working Group has put a lot of support behind our assessment program, often writes letters of support for us, which makes us much more competitive when we write grants to try and get money to keep these programs going or to expand our programs. So what exactly the future looks like, I can't say for certain, but weirs will be a part of it, and certainly sonars will be a part of it.
Makun kata ngerai suting katulah cerut nak ayah kami pinan mengkininuk negawani. Angku kai pagi tadi makut mesuleh setarulah cerai tamakut tang staleh shoot video kamera nak video kai tadi pamta. Makut hukuerat tak ngait tadi atau tak cerai tang suki kiri kene napai mut jalis tadi. Arulatat anyarami wirak takasnami dorten. Doi ikairulutung iugunik makumiunik piuhtrutugut anguwekset dorten ilaksuki atoksoksiksniluki makut wirat.
Well, we're coming close to the end. I'm wondering, though, we still have more of this season left of a little bit of kings, a lot of chum and reds still coming up, followed by the silvers. Is there anything that people should be looking forward to, or anything that thoughts you want to leave people with about the season that we're in right now?
The blank stares around the table. This is Zach. Yeah, you know, I mean, I think, you know, I know there's been a lot of a lot of concern and frustration over the low king salmon numbers. You know, I think the bulk majority of the king run is through the lower river. All of our weirs are currently installed and operating and successfully counting fish on a daily basis. So I think that's something that folks will be paying some really particular attention to, is how the escapement actually materializes. Regardless of what the in-season data tells us, like I said, the rubber hits the road when we start counting them at the spawning grounds, and that'll give us our better indication as to what the escapement actually will be. So, you know, keeping close tabs on those king numbers at the weirs, I think, will be something that folks are really looking at. You know, we've had a couple of years of below average but still healthy chum salmon runs. The chum numbers are looking pretty hot this year. Certainly not, you know, the biggest run we've ever seen, but they're looking quite healthy. So I think folks are should probably be watching that as well to see what the final Bethel test fish numbers for chum say, seeing what the sonar says about chum salmon, and then ultimately what makes it to the spawning grounds. Sockeye have been doing some weird stuff the last couple of years. We've seen some of the latest run timings ever in the last couple of years, and this seems to be another late sockeye run and another big one. We've seen some of the biggest and latest sockeye runs the last couple of years, so kind of keeping tabs on that will be kind of fun. Yeah, just sort of watching the numbers. And, of course, we always have silver season coming up. I think folks get pretty excited for that. The sonar will not be operating through Coho. That'll actually wrap up here at the end of July. We do have a grant that we wrote recently to try and get some federal funding to continue the sonar project through Coho season. So we'll have to see whether we were successful with that. But yeah, we have Coho coming, and I think folks often get pretty excited about seeing those guys show up in the river.
Well, we've reached another end of our show. Thank you so much for listening to Fish Talk today. Thank you to Zach Liller, Nick Smith, and Jordan Head for joining me. And I second Jordan's hello. If anyone at the weirs or the sonar station is listening, thanks for tuning in to Fish Talk. John Active, thank you for translating. And I'm Anna Rose MacArthur. You've been listening to Fish Talk.